Welcome to Black Hat. How are you doing today?
Good so far. How are you?
Yeah, we're great. Thank you. It's a pleasure being here.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining us on securityguytv.com. So we'd like to start first by addressing your respective roles within the company, and then we'll go into what your company does and go a little more under the hood about the particular solutions and products in the market.
Sure. So I'm Mark LaLiberty. I'm an information security analyst on our threat research team at WatchGuard. So I'm in charge of doing most of our threat research, and then we put out our quarterly internet security report to kind of highlight some of the data that we find.
And I'm Corey Nachreiner, CTO of the company. Among other things, I run the threat research team, but also deal with security strategy and acquisitions and new products at WatchGuard.
Excellent. When was WatchGuard created?
We've been around since 1996, so over 20 years. We started as one of the first hardware firewalls that did what they call now deep packet inspection, but we called proxies.
Excellent. That's a very impressive. So today we want to talk to you specifically about the threat landscape, and let's zoom in and on this amazing research that you're doing. We have obviously met with quite a few companies, and a quarterly newsletter sounds good to me. Yeah. If I were the CISO or even a board member and I want to be able to track developments, can you tell us more about the type of research that you do and the information that you share with your clients?
Yeah, sure. So one of the things we do in our quarterly report is we have this thing we call the Firebox feed, which is a threat intelligence feed we get from our tens of thousands of fireboxes, our firewall appliances deployed out in the field. And from that feed, we're able to get quite a bit of good data about different threats that we see potentially trying to attack our customers. So from that, we get some good high-level takeaways.
Mm-hmm. And just so you know a bit about our product, these fireboxes are actually what they call unified threat management or next-generation firewalls. So besides just being firewalls, we have multiple malware detection services, KWAV, advanced malware detection, intrusion prevention, web categorization, URL security features, DLP. And it's based on all the information from these services, like what are the top network attacks we saw this quarter in different parts of the world, what types of malware or threats are spreading the most, and are we detecting malware using signature, old school signature techniques versus some of the modern techniques like behavioral sandboxes.
That's fascinating. So we talk about IoT and so many more devices going on. Are these fireboxes a certain number of fireboxes per company, or are you moving them around geographically?
So our firewall appliances are typically put up at least on the network perimeter. So mm-hmm. they're kind of between the internet and your organization. Because they have multiple interfaces and they support VLAN tagging, smart people also use them to segment their internal network as well. So they're typically gateway type devices that segment your network at different points. You mentioned IoT though. I mean, one of the biggest things in our last security report for Q1 was we saw a huge increase in Linux malware. We saw three particular Linux threats. One was called Linux, it's a generic catch for Linux exploit, one for Linux downloader, and one for Linux flutter. And as we analyze some of these threats, they look like pretty old school Linux attack techniques, like scripts that go and grab tools and put them on a Linux system. But you mentioned IoT. Mark will tell you why we believe this increase in Linux attacks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what we've noticed over the past few years is a dramatic increase in the number of IoT devices that have been deployed out there on the networks. Most industry analysts expect them to just completely blow away even traditional mobile devices within the end of the year. And so with this rise of the number of connected IoT devices out there, they're really becoming a much larger target for attackers to try and hit, which I think is why we're seeing so many of these traditionally old school Linux exploits that are targeting these very unsophisticated, basically mini Linux servers.
And of course, there's many different Linux type of many different IoT devices, but we find a big majority, webcams, DVRs, NAS storage devices, they're just running embedded Linux. And attackers, threat actors already know how to attack Linux. So it's pretty trivial for them to use, some old school techniques against these new devices popping up on the internet.
So these are the new criminals using old school technologies.
It's exactly what it is. And it's because the number of them out there, the attackers are going to go after whatever is going to give them the biggest bang for their buck. And so because there are just so many IoT devices being added every single day, it's a great target for attackers.
And I think it has to do with the economics of IoT. Like if you're a small manufacturer in Asia creating a webcam that hundreds of people buy on Amazon, you're just throwing in off-the-shelf Linux platform. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not making a ton of margin on these devices, so you don't spend time hardening them. As a result, we're finding circa 2,000 vulnerabilities on these devices, really easy to exploit. And another part of our research, by the way, is Mark runs the IoT research project where we find vulnerabilities in devices as well.
Yep, and we found a few. We always responsibly disclose them by first reporting them to the manufacturer, working with them to get it fixed, and then putting out a public advisory for these vulnerabilities. And our last report actually had one of these responsible disclosures in it about some vulnerabilities we found in an IoT camera.
Excellent. So you really are sending the message to the end consumer. How about drones? Can you speak about drones as IoT?
This and, guy can speak about drones.
And also, my son just bought the most recent version of the
Spark.
Yeah. So obviously that's a phenomenal growth rate of drones, but not just that, but the GoPros as well. So you combine the drones and the GoPros, and we're talking about more vulnerabilities.
So I'm a hobbyist, by the way. I love drones for fun. I do racing ones, but as you say, they're just computer systems. I mean, the DJI drones have flight controllers, which are just embedded computers. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of sensors with GPS that can be tricked, and on one hand, manufacturers like DJI, for proprietary sales reasons, try to put protections so that users can't hack them. But already this year, we've found a couple services that have found out how to get past DJI's restrictions. You can make the drones fly over the height limit that they're programmed to stay under. They now have technology to keep them away from airports, but you can, of course, override that too. So drone hacking will definitely continue. It's an interesting new research opportunity.
Well, okay, thank you. But anyone who obviously violates FAA laws is going to
be in trouble.
Very serious trouble. And on that note, so the quarterly newsletter that you send, what type of feedback are you getting from CISOs and other client executives?
I think they actually like it a lot. The point of this isn't just to give the statistics, but it's to help with defense. So we have practical tips in each of our sections saying, we're seeing this. For instance, Linux exploits are blowing up. We're seeing a lot of enumeration of Telnet ports. You can firewall Telnet, or you can use IPS to catch these. So we give them security tips, which they appreciate. One of the big statistics we found is we catch malware at WatchGuard in two different ways. At a very high level, one way is kind of traditional antivirus, where for the most part, a pattern and you're looking for a pattern. You might do other things like heuristics, but for the most part, you have to have seen the malware to block it. That is missing a whole lot of malware. Ransomware like WannaCry is getting past a lot of traditional AV because of this. So we have another service that uses what we call advanced malware sandboxing and looks for behaviors. So one of the statistics we look at for boxes that have both of those services, how does our advanced malware service catch? Because if our advanced malware service catches it, that means it got past gateway antivirus. It was seen as clean by traditional AV. 38% of the attacks we detected on devices that have both needed advanced malware protection. So that really means over one-third of the malware out there, you're probably missing it if you're still using traditional AV techniques.
And that was an increase over last quarter, too, that we noticed. And I'm willing to bet that we're going
to see
that continue to increase.
So that's very valuable information that you can share with your clients and allows them to create dual or even triple layers of protection.
Yeah, and really the point is focus on things that are using machine learning, behavioral analytics, or sandboxing, because they're going to catch more of the zero day. Things like WannaCry, the first hour it came out, I would say about 80% of the AV vendors, their normal engine was not catching it. But behavioral detection caught it right away because, ransomware authors can change the way their binary looks on a digital level, but they can't change what the ransomware is actually doing on a computer.
Understood. Thank you. And what keeps you awake at night? What do you worry about? The industry, on behalf of your clients?
It's just the evolving landscape where you never really know what the next big threat is going to be. And that's where he kind of hit on it. Multi-layered approach to security is something that will really help when you're not sure what the next big attack is going to be tomorrow. If you have multiple layers, you'll have multiple steps to actually try and catch that if it gets past one.
I will also say, and this might be relevant to your audience, that I'm a little concerned about nation-state actors and how they're going to evolve attack techniques even, and make cyber criminals better. So we all know nation states are participating in cyber activities, offensive cyber activities. And there may be valid reasons for that. I'm not saying nation states shouldn't, but just things like government stockpiling zero day that we're learning about in leaks and stuff like that. While you could argue our countries need to protect ourselves, you're also putting your own civilians' products at risk. When these are vulnerabilities and products everyone uses, once they get out there, like for instance SFB1 used, they have major civilian ramifications.
Absolutely.
So I'm worried about the Pandora's box that has been opened even back with Stuxnet and seems to be continuing to escalate year after year.
Thank you so much for your insights and also for describing your company, your products and services. It's been a terrific interview with both of you, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the conference.
Of course. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Have a great conference.
Thank you. From Las Vegas, 2017.